We have many rules that we must follow. Rules which often come to us from other people, maybe even imposed on us. To name a few, we have rules like walk on the right, eat your vegetables, pay your taxes before April 15th, wear your seatbelt while driving. These are, at heart, rules that are intended for our benefit and our well-being, or perhaps for the benefit of others. Now, I'm prepared to debate taxes. I imagine you might have an opinion. But at least part of taxes is to fund our government, and a small portion does care for people in need. These rules are about order and well-being. But as I say, those come to us from outside ourselves. We don't necessarily choose those rules for ourselves. But there is one rule which is different, one that we do choose. Perhaps you've heard of it. It's called a rule of life. And it's a rule in the sense of being something which is regular. It's a kind of structure. And it's not imposed on us by someone else. Rather, a rule of life is created by us. It gives us a structure, some kind of scaffolding, if you will, to hold our life. A rule can also offer for us some comfort, even a feeling of safety as we negotiate the choices of daily life. It's something that we have thought about in advance, so then when we come moment by moment to decisions that must be made, we have a framework to make those decisions. A rule of life can give a kind of cohesion to our life as we strive to live into that call of God ever more deeply, that call to be in relationship with God, our neighbor, and ourselves. Now, each February, the priests of the diocese go on retreat with the bishop for 3 days. And this past February, a year ago, our retreat was led by Sister Adele Marie of the Society of St. Margaret in Duxbury. I know some of you have heard of them. They have a beautiful house on the water in Duxbury. They do work in the city of Boston, in New York City, and they also have a house in Haiti. In the course of the retreat, Sister Adele Marie offered various books that might be helpful to us in nurturing our own spiritual lives. And one she offered is about creating a rule of life. It's a book called At Home in the World, A Rule of Life for the Rest of Us. The rest of us meaning mostly monastics create rules of life. This is for all of us who are not monastics. It's written by a woman named Margaret Gunther. And in this book, she offers chapters on various themes. She offers reflections and experiences from her own life that might help in thinking about a rule of life ourselves. And she includes questions at the ends of chapters, questions which help focus our thinking as we think about what would a rule of life for you, for me, look like. Now, don't worry, you're going to hear much more about this book. We'll be using it in our Lenten program, which actually comes very soon. Lent is starting February 14th. So you hear more about it as we move closer. But I want to share with you just something she says in chapter 13, a chapter she calls Work, Promise, Peril. She observes that many of us are at the mercy of our calendars. We might feel too busy, that we even are being run ragged, and we worry that there's nothing we can do about it. We just are stuck in this situation, and this is life. And so we're left feeling we can't change anything and feeling exhausted and without focus. We might be left feeling like we don't have enough time away from work and busyness. And additionally, we have pressures from society which say to be busy is to be a productive member of society. We live in a world that values being able to boast of how busy one is. And so Gunther suggests we challenge all that. And she suggests one way we do that is by what she calls holy uselessness. That's right. Periods when we are not focused on being productive, when we don't think we have to accomplish something, but instead we simply, as she says, delight in being. Here's what she says about it. As hardworking adults, we too often lose the gift of letting go for delight in simply being. We persuade ourselves that every moment must be lived productively. Like the busy little bee, we feel a holy obligation to improve each shining hour. We would do well to take very small children and big, silly dogs as our teachers. That quality that children, that dogs have, to just be in the moment, delighted by whatever's around them, whatever they are sensing, experiencing. Not focused on, I've got to do these things, I need to be productive. But taking time to simply be and experience life. For she says, this is rejuvenating to the soul. She suggests taking times for rest, periods when we insist we do not work, knowing how important it is for well-being. She also recognizes or reminds us that to do so is to follow the Ten Commandments. It's no accident we're called to keep the Sabbath. It is essential for holy living. And so she offers that antidote to the constant activity and busyness. This is echoed by Jesus in our gospel this morning. Jesus is being sought out by the crowds. Mark tells us the whole city is coming looking for Jesus. This is on the heels of last week's gospel, where Jesus was in the synagogue offering a new teaching, showing that he has power. And the people are amazed. They're amazed when he casts out an unclean spirit from a man in the synagogue. They are amazed that Jesus has this power to heal whatever alienates us, has the power to restore people to wholeness, to the lives that God intends. In today's passage, he's left the synagogue and gone to the home of Peter and Andrew, and the crowds come seeking his healing. But Jesus, before dawn, leaves. He goes out alone and finds a place to pray. So Peter comes searching for him, telling him, there are crowds to be healed. You have to come back. These people need you. Now, the English does not adequately express the Greek. Peter and the others are more than searching. They're frankly astonished that Jesus could be alone praying when people need him. The Greek implies a sense of urgency, that in fact Jesus needs to be brought back to reality, to have his senses restored. Peter is ultimately questioning the behavior of Jesus. It's the first time he does this in Mark's gospel. It's not the last. He doesn't really understand what Jesus is about yet. And so he assumes that Jesus will want to respond to these crowds. Jesus, however, is clear with Peter. Healing is one part of his ministry, but it's not the only part. He also must preach and teach. And he's not to be confined to one place, to one house where people will just keep coming. He needs to move from place to place, spreading the good news. And so Jesus says to Peter, not, great, let me get back to that work with the crowds, but instead says, let's move on to the next place. Throughout the Gospels, we see Jesus seeking to balance those times for healing and preaching with times for solitude and prayer. He balances times with the crowds who are seeking him with time by himself. He balances time with just his disciples with time alone. And so Jesus offers us an example in the midst of the busyness of our lives. He offers us that call to seek balance between work and rest, between activity and times of holy uselessness. And he reminds us to heed the commandments, setting aside 24 hours of Sabbath, that time for prayer and rest and solitude, for activities that feed and nurture us and our relationship with God, with our neighbor and ourselves. It's interesting, we have this reading as we move through the season after the Epiphany. Lent is coming soon. In fact, Ash Wednesday is February 14th. And so I think there's an opportunity here for us to begin thinking about how we will keep a holy Lent. What will be part of our Lenten disciplines and practices? And perhaps this gospel is a call to include times for rest and for holy uselessness. Now, there's more to this gospel today, for it opens with a passage with a healing. Though, actually, it's much more than a simple healing account. It takes place in the home of Peter and Andrew, and it's Peter's mother-in-law who is ill. She has a fever and is in bed. She's unable to be with the community. She's unable to be active. And so Jesus goes to her and lifts her by the hand, and the fever leaves her. She is healed. Now, in Jesus' time, it was understood that fevers were caused by some kind of demon forces. And you hear that in the language. The fever leaves her as if it has its own existence, its own identity. It has been possessing her and holding on to her, and Jesus is able to set her free, to have that demon leave her. So Jesus is healing Peter's mother-in-law, And in doing so, he's showing his power over the evil forces of this world. He's showing the power that he has to set humanity free from what possesses us. He has the power to set us free from what keeps us from the life that God intends. Jesus can lift us out of those forces that prevent us from following, from living fully as God intends us to live. Mark tells us that once the fever leaves her, Peter's unnamed mother-in-law begins serving them in the house. Now, at first hearing, this may sound like what you might expect in the first century. A woman was of lesser status. Her role was to serve those who were around her. So, of course, when she's healed, she gets up and she makes food for them. But Mark is actually telling us something much more profound than that. It's masked by our English translation. But in the Greek, it's much more obvious. For the word used for serve is not the one used to serve food. It's actually diakonia, that Greek word from which we get our word deacon, the one who serves. And it's not used for food preparation. It's used for the service, which is that servanthood of Jesus. And in fact, in Mark's gospel, it's only used 3 times, always referring to servanthood, to discipleship. It's used here. It's used in chapter 10 about Jesus himself. He is the one that comes not to be served, but to serve. And it appears in chapter 15, near the very end of the gospel, referring to the women who have come with Jesus from Galilee, those who followed him, who served him, who are with him in Jerusalem, at the cross, at the empty tomb. The women are the ones who are there, not the men. And so Mark is beginning and ending his gospel with women who are faithful, women who are served, who are disciples, women who live that servanthood of Jesus. And again, no man is referred to in that way in Mark. So in a society where women are not valued, Mark is showing us that in the Christian community, women are the faithful followers of Jesus. Women have active roles. Women are even leaders in that early church. The service of Peter's mother-in-law is not so much about serving dinner, but living that life that Jesus calls her to be a servant in that church gathered in her home. It's reminiscent of, in fact, the early church where there weren't buildings like this, but the church dwelled and worshipped in homes. So Mark is, I think, telling us that the mission of the church is to open our doors, to welcome those who desire to be set free from whatever alienates, whatever oppresses, whatever possesses us and keeps us from following Jesus, setting us free to be a community that offers that restoring, healing love of God to everyone. Jesus comes to free us, to prevent us from whatever keeps us from following. Jesus comes to give us that power to say yes to that invitation to discipleship, to that life of Jesus, that life that's rooted in prayer and also is rooted in loving service. That life where we seek our will, not our will, but God's will, a life that's focused on welcoming those in Jesus' name. And so, as followers of Jesus, let us strive for that balance. Those times when we retreat into solitude and quiet, where we encounter God's presence, where we discern and listen for God's call. And then renewed and strengthened by those times, may we then faithfully go on to follow Jesus in his call to loving servanthood, to diakonia, that we might serve all and love all, especially the least. And may we always be a people who welcome all within these walls, that we might be that community who are those faithful followers of Jesus. Amen.